Welcome to the Manor.
Welcome back to the Twin Terrors Macabre Manor of Mead, Metal, and Mayhem. I am James.
I'm Jody.
Welcome to another fantabulous, most Excelsior rated, most fantastically awesome, and we know we're beautiful because the beholder said so, 50th anniversary Dungeons & Dragons. One of my favorite episodes of the animated series, and for those of you who read, is it Dragon or Dungeon? I think it was Dragon Magazine, the one with the kind of chunky fighter holding flowers out to the female beholder.
Oh, yeah.
And the Futurama episode, where they have to go into the main bureaucracy to get Bender's personality disc back, and they're going through, and they bump a sleeping beholder who starts shooting flames out and goes, "Please don't tell my manager I was sleeping." But anyway, did I say I'm James yet?
No.
Yeah, well, I am.
Actually, you did.
Kind of assumed, but damn it, Janet, fuck off. So, my good asshole, what are you drinking?
I'm still having the amaretto from the previous episode. But when we get near the end of this one, I'm gonna finish this off, and I'm gonna drink the last of the Malort that's in this bottle.
Oh, so that'll be interesting.
Yeah, not sure how that's going to go. I also may just be chugging it straight from the bottle instead of pouring it into a shot glass, because there's really not that much left.
Do it, do it, do it.
I just didn't want to do it before I drank the amaretto, so.
I understand. I am having, and I have to look it up because I left the bottle in the other room. Rites of the, is that it? Ah, okay, good. Would have fouled it up. I'm having Three Floyds Irish Red Ale, but it's new this year. It's not their Imperial Ardvri. It is their Return of the Ancients.
Okay.
Cool, it's got a, well, actually, this would have went really well with when we were playing Cthulhu the other night, because it's got a deer skull-faced kind of humanoid on it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, which is why it kind of fits with our D&D episode a little bit. Probably would fit better with the Cthulhu episode if we ever do one, but we'll see. Yeah, that's good. It's 6.5%, slightly malty, nice caramely. Really, it's really quite good. I'm enjoying it quite a bit. All right. Do you have anything you want to mention before we get into Arneson and Gygax?
No.
All right, then. When we last spoke on D&D, we had talked about Arneson and Gary working with Mike Carr for their Don't Give Up the Ship, and how Gygax had gotten some royalties, but the other two had not, and eventually they did, but then the check bounced and that threatened, and then they got paid. And
this sounds like it's going to be a running joke.
It's definitely going to be a running something. But now, this episode, we'll start getting into how they really start doing things that are going to be D&D.
Cool.
Yeah. Ooh. So, my next note was going to be, you need to go listen to those other episodes if you haven't yet. I think we have two out, right? Or, well, as we record, they're not out, but we recorded two the other day, right? For episode three, I'm going to start with Arneson's, Dave Arneson, who we have talked about, his Corner of the Table fanzine. This was just a fanzine that he did. We talked about how the creators of war games and various things would do their own little rules and stuff, but also they would publish their fanzines, and we kind of mentioned something like that with the dice with Gary Gygax. But Dave Arneson did Corner of the Table fanzine. That would be the first place where he would publish Blackmoor.
Yes, no relation to Richie.
That's true. I get that reference. That matches up really well with the episode we just recorded, and Jody gave a hint because of his drink, so you can all figure it out.
Yeah.
But Blackmoor was one of the first two really big areas of fictional make-believe regions, locales, worlds, if you will, that people played D&D in.
Yeah.
Fact, Blackmoor was part of the Great Kingdom, capitalized G, capitalized K, which is also where Greyhawk would get its start,
Okay.
which is the other great little area that was created by Gary Gygax, and we'll get more into that here in a little bit.
Yeah, okay.
But we also had mentioned chainmail in the previous episode, where Gygax and Jeff Perrin put it together as a war game thing, but they had a fantasy supplement where you can relive the adventures of Tolkien and Howard and Lovecraft.
Damn it, I was going to look at my PDF copy of that.
You can. I mean, I've got it right here, but if I'll start talking and you can look it up.
Well, that's all right.
All right, good deal.
Oh,
And Arneson was the first that we know of. At least he's the first to really take advantage of it and delve deep because, I use that word on purpose, he's the first to
yeah.
use chainmail for dungeon delving.
Dungeon. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the chainmail supplement with the fantasy thing did go into various things, but Arneson actually took it and started making dungeons where your characters would go down and do what is considered a dungeon dive or dungeon delve in D&D.
Also a dungeon, also known as a dungeon crawl, I think.
Yes, that was actually the term I was trying to think. I have heard the other two, but dungeon crawl is what I'm used to and just would not come to my brain. But Gygax wanted to use this dungeon delving or dungeon crawling to put it into the third edition of Chainmail, although Arneson had said the rule changes were very minor, except for the addition of the dungeon in late 1972.
Okay.
But Arneson had also added Avalon Hills, that we mentioned last time,
Yes.
outdoor survival game for wilderness adventures. Evidently my notes here suck, but I know what happened. So the Avalon Hills outdoor survival game was used as a war game, but it used the hexagonal map grid things, the
Okay.
six-sided, like a honeycomb.
Yeah.
And Arneson used those for wilderness adventures.
That has carried through.
It has. It's very useful.
Yeah. Typically, when you use miniatures in a tabletop role-playing game, anything indoors is a square grid map. So you'll have a square grid laid out on the map, and anything outdoors is usually done as a hexagon. So I guess this is where that started.
Yeah, although you did mention the use of wilderness and outdoor things in older wargaming, but yeah, this is where it came from for D&D.
Yeah, okay.
And Arneson here really, really stressed the role of the referee, which was what the Dungeon Master was first called that Jody had mentioned in the previous episode, or one of the two previous episodes.
Yeah. Yeah, umpire, I think, was the term that was in the article I saw, but referee, umpire, same thing.
Oh, I could be wrong. You mentioned umpire from the rules, and then we mentioned referee become the DM, and
Yeah.
or maybe not. If not, this is the first time you've heard referee, and haha, it's the same thing as an umpire.
Yeah.
Practically.
In this setting, yeah.
Yeah. Depending on the sport, they can be very different. But Blackmoor's creation, I have a little note on this. One day, on a Saturday, after reading several sword and sorcery books, eating popcorn, and watching monster movies, Dave Arneson created a maze-like dungeon populated with orcs and similar beasties, from which an earlier interview shows that he used monsters from Chainmail. Blackmoor
Cool.
began as a development of David Wesley's Bronstein game, following Dwayne Jenkins' Bronstein Old West variant and Arneson's own wargaming sessions, into which he had begun to introduce fantasy elements. Initially inspired by Conan novels and Gothic horror, Arneson expanded the setting around the eponymous town, castle, and multi-level dungeon to include ideas from The Lord of the Rings and Dark Shadows, and applied the fantasy supplement rules from the chainmail game. Blackmoor was a campaign centered on individual player characters capable of a series of progressions, which encouraged cooperative play to succeed, also indicating the start of experience levels.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, Dave did a lot. He deserves as much credit as Gary.
Yeah, he does. He does. Yeah, he definitely, he definitely contributed as much as I think he did as much as Guy Gax did.
Yeah, I would call it 50-50 in different ways, which I think I have notes on soonish, but who knows if it's this time or next time.
You
This is
would.
where, oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
You would know. They're your notes.
Well, it's now been a week since I read through these. I
Well,
know it's coming up. I just don't know how many episodes we'll get through at any given point in time.
okay.
I'm going to bring up a new name that is quite important, and that name is Dave McGarry.
Okay.
It's not McGarry, it's McGarry. Re
Okay.
re regardless of what my fucking notes here have.
Yeah.
That's the issue with voice texting when a lot of your voice texts have to do with Irish and Scottish things. But Dave McGarry was working on a board game that incorporated chainmail and Blackmoor, who Arneson told Gary about towards the end of 1972. So when Arneson and McGarry came to visit Lake Geneva in November 1972, Arneson ran an adventure for McGarry and Gygax.
Cool.
I have seen one or two of my many references. They gave the date of early 1973, and I'm calling bullshit because I've seen more in November 72, and that matches much better with the timeline of everything else.
Okay.
But anyway, we'll get more into that board game, but we'll say it is called Dungeon. Ooh.
Yeah.
I still have my copy from like 1980 or so.
It's still in print, actually.
It is, which is why
Yeah, because
mine's.
I bought a copy of it last year, so
Yeah, which is why mine's worth nothing.
pretty much.
Jerks.
McGarry still has he still I think he still has his original map that he used. It wasn't actually a board, it was like on, well, I don't remember what material it was, but he could, it was maybe some sort of cloth because he can roll it up.
That's cool.
I think he still has it. Because I saw something that he was running it at a con, and had it said he had the original map.
That's wicked cool.
Yeah.
It's on vellum.
Yeah.
You don't get that joke. You've not read some of the original D&D stuff. So anyway, when Arneson and McGarry, who are both from the Twin Cities group up in Minnesota, came down to Lake Geneva to show Gary both Dungeon the Board Game and Blackmoor, Ernie, Gary's son, and Gary, and the Coons brothers that I'll mention a lot more here soon, but they were local war gamers that Gary hung out with and talked to a lot. They played the first ever considered Dungeons and Dragons game. So Arneson ran it, meaning he was the referee that would become the dungeon master. For those who have played back in the day, I really don't, it may still say this. I don't know. I don't know every edition very well. I mostly know the original, first edition, the basic, second fairly well, and fifth fairly well-ish, even though I should read the player's handbook better. But back in the day, they actually told you to pick a party leader. So instead of necessarily going around and asking everybody what's going on, the player characters, the group, would kind of decide, but then you had a leader who would tell the DM or referee what was going to happen.
I don't think the newer editions have kept that. I could be wrong, but I've read the fifth edition Player's Handbook and Dungeon Master's Guide, and I don't think there was anything in there specifically about that.
I don't remember it from second edition either, honestly.
I was gonna say I don't remember it in second edition. So
I'm trying to remember first edition, but I'm fairly certain in the Beckme mod, like the basic red box, it did, because I do remember having my original people, Donnie, Chris, and Alex. Robbie would join later, kind of replaced Alex because of, what was going on. That is neither here nor there. But I remember having them do that. We had the party leader who would kind of be in charge, and we had the party mapper who would do the mapping. But yeah, McGarry was party leader. So when I say that, that's where it comes from. Who would be used to it because he'd already been playing with Arneson. And everyone rolled dice, but Arneson did the calculations behind the screen, which I like because I've heard of some games where the DM rolls all of the dice. And I've never played in one like that. And when I've seen it on Stranger Things or any show, I don't see it, but evidently it's a thing.
I don't know if they did it every time they showed Dungeons and Dragons on Big Bang Theory, but I know one episode, it was the episode where Sheldon spent the evening with Bernadette playing Dungeons and Dragons, and that's how he ran it. He rolled all the dice.
Ah, but with Amy Fairfowler.
No, it was Bernadette.
Oh, just the two of them. That's right, because
Yeah, because
she's pregnant and couldn't go out.
she was pregnant and couldn't go out and eat sushi like everybody, or do the wine tasting. It
That's
was the
right.
wine
Sorry,
tasting.
I'm kind of re-binging, and I just saw the episode where that's the first time Amy and Sheldon kiss, but their characters are kissing.
Yeah, that yes, that that as well,
No. That's right. I forgot about that. Yeah, that's not for another couple of years, I think, seasons.
yeah.
Yeah. So, but anyway, we don't really digress because that's important.
Yeah.
So anyway, they were playing and everything, and they got to a point where they knew they were going to get their asses handed to them. So three of them ran, except for Terry Coons, who had the first official D&D death by fireball. They were killed by an evil, he was killed by an evil mage.
Oh, that's funny. You know what would have been even funnier is if it had been his own party that cast the fireball.
You need to let that go.
What? Didn't bother me.
That's true. You were smart.
I just know it happens, and my wife likes to play characters that can cast fireball.
Oh yeah, and there's that. Didn't I just send you all a meme about that?
You may have, yeah.
Well, if not, I've got it saved for you here soon. Oh, yeah, it's just so Fireball, for all those who are wondering, is a third level magic user spell. And the meme, and this will click your memory if I send it or not, because I'm not going to scroll through and look. But there's that meme of the guy with his girlfriend. But he's looking at another girl, and his girlfriend's like, "What?" And the meme is the girlfriend is every other third level spell, and the girl he's checking out is Fireball.
Sounds about right.
I don't know if I know of any magic user I've ever played with that did not choose Fireball as their
As soon
first
as
third
they
level
could.
spell.
As soon as they had access to it, they chose it.
Yep.
Well, I mean, it's it's fireball. I mean, it's one of the most effective spells there is.
Lots of damage in a nice white area.
The whole satanic panic thing, and people, oh, you can learn to do real magic by the, well, no, you can't, because if we could, we'd all be lobbing fireballs at each other.
I would have magic missiled a couple of priests in my time. That's a first level spell. I would have had it right away.
We wouldn't need conventional warfare. We'd be doing magic shit. I mean, come on.
And that whole the players have to do what the dungeon master says is obviously bullshit because we all drive the dungeon master nuts.
Stop trying to seduce the fish.
are no traps. Oh my God, go through the door.
You see a gazebo on the hill. What's it doing? It's a gazebo.
I cast fireball.
That is one of my favorite D&D stories.
You
And it's not ours.
see a warehouse. Is that like somebody who's a lycanthrope who turns into a is now. Anyway, Terry Coon's first death by fireball, evil mage. The others ran. They were smart. But I'm going to point out that why did the couple guys from the Twin Cities come down to Lake Geneva? Gary didn't drive, so everybody had to come to him.
Oh, did not know that.
It's a very Sheldonish thing. In fact, I don't know what we'll get to eventually in the long run. It won't be in these because obviously we're not going to get to where they are making a ton of money. But Gary does eventually get a driver.
Was
All
it one
right,
of his
but
kids?
do
Was it one of his kids?
no. Actually, it's kind of a driver, bodyguard, quote unquote, type of. I don't know. No.
Okay, cool. Okay, yeah, I'll be interested to learning more about that.
But my next notes. Ooh, here we go. Next notes are on the first characters to play D&D, and then after that we get to 1973, and I know that rhymes. But yeah, I think we can get through the first characters and then we'll decide what we want to do for the episode at that point. All right, so the first characters to ever be played in a Dungeons and Dragons, even though it wasn't called D&D yet.
Right.
According to Mike Carr, who we've talked about, and remember, this is a Twin Cities person. So we have Dave Arneson, Mike Carr, Dave McGarry from Twin Cities. And we've got Gary Gygax and his kids and Coon's brothers from Lake Geneva. So, Mike Carr, when the Blackmoor campaign was getting underway, Dave Arneson assigned me the role of village cleric, so I can proudly claim to be the first one of that character class, which is a pretty cool distinction. That is kind of cool. It says,
Yeah.
I had a small church, but not much else. My cleric wielded a mace since he was unable to use any edged weapon, and that will be important soon. As they,
Yeah.
yeah, you know the story.
Yeah.
So as a low-level adventurer, my fighting ability was unremarkable, but I did have the ability to heal wounds on a limited scale, which proved to be somewhat useful to our party.
Yeah, oh yeah.
It's true that I did take part in the original Blackmoor campaign and did play the role of priest, participating in a few dungeons and overland expeditions. I also recall having the ability to cast one or two spells and having the ability to help heal minor wounds, but in retrospect, it's obvious my character was low level, not particularly impressive, since my primary interest was in historical games rather than in fantasy games, which is still the case. I didn't play too often and didn't make any progress with that character. And it's ironic that I knew both Dave Arneson and Gary Gygax fairly well and enjoyed their company from time to time, but never really played much D&D with either of them.
Interesting. Yeah.
And then there's Mike Mornard, who really won't be in any of my notes beyond this, but it's interesting because he was another player in Arneson's campaign at the time and is unique in the fact that he's the only player to have played in all three of Gary Gygax and Dave Arneson's original campaigns, as well as Phil Barker's, who I don't have anything else on, but he was one of the original playtesters. So Mornard recalls the origins of the character class designed for Carr's character, so he's hearkening back to Carr, but then
Yeah.
continuing on and making a little bit more. And he said, I was there in chainmail. There were wizards that functioned as artillery, which is what Tony was just saying.
Yep.
And then there was Dave Arneson's first miniatures role-playing game. Some character players were good guys and some players were bad guys, and Dave was the referee. It's quite interesting to note that it wasn't always cooperative at the very beginning.
Yeah, I was gonna say I could see that. Especially if it's based a lot on war games, because you had to have two play at least two players that were adversarial.
Yeah, but then I can also see why it devolved, or I'd say evolved, into cooperative.
Right.
But yeah, kind of like both.
Yeah, where the referee would take over the role of all the antagonists.
Yeah.
All the antagonists.
Which is where doing stupid voices comes in handy. and reading books, because I'll say when we played Shadowrun and GM that, having read a few Shadowrun books, I kind of got the lingo down, and yeah, it was helpful. But anyway, one of the bad guys wanted to play a vampire. He was extremely smart and capable, and he got more experience. He got tougher and tougher. And this was in the early 70s, so we're going to harken to other episodes. When I say, so the model for vampire was Christopher Lee in Hammer films.
That makes a lot of sense.
Does.
Did not know that, but I totally see it.
Yep. He even continued to say, no deep folklore shit.
It
And he said, well,
was
after a
kind of
time.
still that way in D&D.
A little bit. Yeah, the vampires in D&D can't go out at night like Dracula.
Yeah.
Or sorry, they can't go out in the day. They can only go out at night. You all know what I meant.
I knew what you meant.
And evidently this first vampire bad guy character was called Sir Fang, because he said nobody could touch Sir Fang. And this necessitated the inclusion of a vampire hunter character such as Van Helsing. And that character could also be used to heal and cure disease, and hence the priest was born, later changed to cleric. And here we go. Here's the story that Jody was sniggering about. Part of the blunt weapons only came later due to Gary's reading stories of Archbishop Turpin, who wielded a mace because he didn't want to shed blood. But obviously, Dave Arneson already had that thing going with Mike Carr.
Right.
So,
So I wonder if Arneson had read those stories too, and maybe that's why he did it. I don't know. I don't know. The thing about not shedding blood is what I've always heard as to why clerics in D&D were supposed to use blunt weapons. But you stop and think about it. You crush somebody's skull with a mace, there's going to be a lot of blood.
my note in parentheses out of my own note, I said, oh, how holy of him, Snicker.
Yeah.
But then my next little note for myself to myself and for this is was, well, what about evil clerics who don't care?
Yeah. What about them?
Poor evil clerics. But yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to say Dave Arneson came up with it first and Gary jumped in with his Archbishop Turpin, or maybe they kind of came up with it together and hadn't talked about it, and it can be a mutual side by side thing.
Yeah, it's I mean that happens.
So I'm willing to call neither liars and just say that's what it was. I'm gonna have to say that a lot. And in order to
Yeah.
provide, I'm gonna move on. In order to provide a playtest environment in which to develop these rules, after he had played with Dave and Dave and stuff, Gygax designed his own castle, Castle Greyhawk, and prepared the first level of a dungeon that lay beneath it. Two of his children, Ernie and Elise, were the first players.
So she was the first girl to play D&D.
He was the first girl to play D&D.
Cool.
Yeah, so girls have technically been playing D&D since Gary Gygax started playing D&D.
Yeah, that's cool.
During the evening, the children fought and destroyed the first monsters of the Greyhawk dungeon, which were some giant centipedes.
Okay.
And this story has been told so much that I think I've kind of got it in here in a decent order, because I did actually, unlike a lot of other notes, I did go through and did several iterations of this. But we'll see how I do.
Okay.
But during the same session, Ernie and Elise also found the first treasure, a chest of 3,000 copper coins, which was too heavy to carry, much to the children's disappointment. So Gary used encumbrance. Which they were sad that they had to stop, but Gary said, oh, it's your bedtime, so go up to bed. And as soon as his children went to bed, Gary immediately began work on the second level of the dungeon because he didn't have it ready and needed the break. My next notes, so some of this will overlap, but it says when Ernie and Elise played the first game, they burned the centipede nest, which also set fire to a spell scroll, which their dad was not happy with because he wanted them to find it. But Gary did sound effects of zing, zing, zing. And and then yelled at them for having destroyed magic items.
Oh, no.
Oh, but there are other variations. In the first game, they come across a giant centipede, a scorpion nest, and a band of kobolds. With the chest of copper coins being their treasure, as they were filling their bags with coins, there was a growling sound. Something emerged from the darkness, which was the end of that day, making the kids want to play more.
Nice.
And Ernie Jr., his mage's name was Tenser, which is an anagram of Ernest.
A lot of those early characters are anagrams or the player's name spelled backwards.
Oh, yes. I do mention that Tenser specifically because Tenser has a lot of spells. There is a shit ton of like Tenser's floating disc or whatever the fuck it is. Like, there's a lot of Tenser still in the
Yeah.
game 50 years later.
Now I think they had to, after Gary was out of the company, when especially when they did second edition, they took out a lot of the names of characters that came from him or his kids, but I think some of them they worked back in. Because yeah, I think Tensors is still in there.
Oh yeah, it's I looked up a few of those, and yeah, a lot of them, most of them are back in. I don't think Gary had any choice but to let him keep using it. I think they just tried to minimize Gary's role.
That could be, or it was part of the agreement or something, and I guess later on a different agreement got worked out, maybe.
There really wasn't much of an agreement when Gary got booted.
Well, that's true.
Anyway, we're jumping ahead.
Yeah, that's down the road.
So Ernie Jr., Ernest, was Tenser, a magic user, the first magic user to play with Gary's thing, and Elise was the cleric Alyssa, Alyssa. So close to her name, Elise, but not quite. So not an anagram, but just a similarity. She said the game was not very exciting, but Ernie loved it right away, although Elise did continue playing until she got older. And things such as boys occupied her mind. The other, he had five children. I know we mentioned not doing biographies, but in this case it's pertinent because his other three children, well, he with his first wife, he had five. Well, yeah, anyway. His other three children then also played, at least up to the point where the younger two girls, Heidi and Cindy, allowed their youngest boy, Luke, take over as DM, but they did soon lose interest after that.
Okay.
Then the next night, I forgot to put the other name in there, and I'm trying to see what. Damn it. I'm going to talk really, really slow because I need to know his brother's name, wherever it's at. Damn it. Damn it. I know I've got it in here too. Oh, here. It's right here. It's right underneath. Good. I don't have to look it up.
Okay.
The next night, so the second night, Don K, who will be extremely important soon,
Yeah.
and the two Koontz brothers, Terry and Rob, roll up the characters Merlin, Robillard, and Tarek, respectively. So, Marilyn doesn't really have much to do with Don K, but you have Robillard with Rob and Tarek with Terry. So,
Yeah.
they're close. Already, they all will be very important during various eras of D&D.
Yes.
But do want to mention that Tenser became the second character to reach the 13th and at the time the bottom level of the Greyhawk Dungeons, when he noticed that Robillard was missing and went in search of him. And Gary borrowed Tenser's name for two spells. Hey, I got one right. Tenser's floating disc and Tenser's transformation. Did I say floating disc? I said something
Yes, you
floating
did.
earlier.
You did say floating disk, and
Woohoo!
I didn't. I started to jump in, but you got disk out before I could. So I was like, okay, he got it. I'll leave it alone.
To be fair, it's not that I necessarily remember that spell from having played D&D so much, because I never really played magic users more than a handful of times. I made these notes.
Yeah.
If you want to meet Maryland, you can. If you play the module, jumping ahead in years, The Land Beyond the Magic Mirror.
Oh, okay.
He's an NPC in it, and that one I'm pretty sure is in our favorite modules episode.
I think it was, yeah.
Robillard was originally the creation of Rob Kuntz, but Kuntz quickly grew impatient with play when it involved more than a couple players, often playing solo adventures one-on-one with Gygax, and their constant, almost daily play meant that Robillard rapidly gained power. As the city Greyhawk was developed and fleshed out, Robillard also became the secret owner of the Green Dragon Inn in the city of Greyhawk, so already there are Green Dragon and Red Dragon Inns. Although I find it funny that specifically he used Green Dragon when there's a Green Dragon in Hobbiton, and
Yes.
Gary didn't like Tolkien.
He said that, but
Although I guess maybe it was Rob Koontz who named the pub, you know.
that could be, yeah.
I shouldn't say anything bad. Maybe he named Green Dragon Inn. But anyway, he used this to keep tabs on happenings in the city, and Robillard was not only the first to reach the 13th and bottom level of Gygax's Greyhawk dungeon, but he was the first to enter Garry's Temple of Elemental Evil,
Yes.
which we mentioned definitely in our favorite modules podcast.
Yeah.
Koontz trashed it. Robillard trashed it from top to bottom. And Koontz later related that Garry was very dismayed that his masterpiece dungeon had been destroyed by a single adventurer. And as punishment, Gygax had an army pursue Robillard all the way back to his castle, where he was forced to abandon it and had even lost possession of the Green Dragon Inn. Oh, Garry.
yeah.
And after a few months of almost nonstop play as the dungeon master, although this time called the referee, Gygax asked Rob Koontz to become a co-dungeon master, which would allow Gygax an opportunity to experience the game as a player. And he created several characters, including a first-level wizard in 1973. This wizard was based off of Gygax's interest in Finnish mythology and named the wizard Mordenkainen,
Yes.
is still used to this day in fifth edition.
It is. There's actually a couple of books that have Mordekainen's name in the title.
Yeah, I've got one over here, but it's inside a drawer and I'm not going to pull
Yeah, that's fine.
Excuse me as I whip this out. But just so you know, Mordenkainen is a portmanteau, which is a mashup of words, of the mythical heroes Mordecai and Lemminkainen from Finnish mythology. He is to become Gygax's most famous character and his favorite to play. And over several years of gameplay, Gygax developed the character traits and adventures with which Mordenkainen would become associated, as well as raising the wizard to 20-something levels.
Cool. Can't do that
And
anymore.
sorry, I was also saying something. I thought you were going to repeat it. What'd you say?
I said you can't do that anymore. It caps at 20.
Oh yeah, well in advance. Well, that's right, because there's no really basic Beckme anymore or advanced. Now it's just Dungeons and Dragons, isn't it?
Yeah, so in fifth edition it caps at 20th level, but they're in the Dungeon Master's Guide, it gives suggestions on what to do in place of giving levels after that.
I think that they did that all the way, even back in the first edition, because they would go up to 20 in the book, but you could go further. But the basic expert, you know, the Beckme things that we talked about,
Yeah.
you go up to 36 level for humans anyway.
Oh, okay.
And at that point, you might become immortal or not. But my next note says could do more on characters, but it would bog it down. I tried to give the most cool things instead of just everything.
Yeah.
And it's going to move on. But I do have a note here. I'm not sure why I put it here. Oh, I do. I do have a reason. I don't have the exact time here. So I'm going to give a small story that goes with 1972, 1973, 1974, but I don't have the year.
Okay.
But then I'm going to jump forward to a point past what we're doing this arc because it matches exactly with it.
Okay.
So at this time, 72 to 74, couple FBI agents infiltrated the gaming group because news of this weird game had gotten around and people were wondering if they were subversives. So evidently, it was a young man and young woman. And when I say that, of course, they're FBI. So, 20s, maybe early 30s. They don't give the ages.
Right.
But the female was mentioned as being extremely attractive. So when they came to the door asking to play the game with the characters, with the people at Gary's house, they were allowed. But Gary's wife was already at different various points in time wondering if Gary was having affairs because he would leave to go gaming and be gone all night. And she even went to one of the houses at one point and was like, "What's going on? I know he's here. Who's he having sex with or something?" And they lead her downstairs, and there he is, gaming D&D and war games with his friends. But this duo did go down, and they gamed, and they saw that it was just war gaming fun so much that at least the guy asked if he could keep playing with their group afterwards.
I think I've heard that story, yeah.
Oh, but the crossover of the FBI is in the future several years where they're actually a main company and they have their own building and they're starting to create a game called Top Secret.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, Top Secret's a secret agent game and they were playing it in-house and they were making all these notes that would be put into the trash and somebody saw the trash. And saw notes about how they needed to kill Mr. X, which there's actually a name, and it's not here on this page. If I have it later, I'll bring it up. And they were thinking that the people in this building were actually spies wanting to kill American citizens. So the FBI came and investigated them for that too. And they had to show them the rules and what was going on.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember reading that. That is hilarious. You've talked a little bit about the campaign world. You had Blackmoor setting and you had the Greyhawk setting. Were you going how much more did you have on that? Were you going to say what they had actually named the world, or is that something you're going to do later?
Well, right now it's actually called the Great Kingdom. They haven't named it yet, but
Okay.
actually, I probably wasn't going to go into it. So go for it.
Well, the planet, well, I guess before I mention that, so the map that they were using where they were putting all these things, for the home campaign, when they actually published this stuff, they created a different map. But the home campaign that they were using, especially Gary Gygax, was North America. So Castle Greyhawk, I think they had located where Chicago is.
Which would make sense.
Yeah. So the name of the planet, and I do think, if I remember correctly, it wasn't just North America. It's just that's where the Kingdom of Greyhawk was located, and Blackmoor was somewhere in the western part of the continent. So they were using Earth as the main map for the home campaign, and instead of calling it Earth, they spelled it Oerth, which I for years thought was just pronounced Oerth, but apparently it's pronounced like Bugs Bunny with a Brooklyn accent saying Earth. So it's Oith.
I didn't know that. Hey, talk. It's good.
But yeah, like I said, when they actually went to publish these things, they changed the map so it wasn't, Earth.
Which also would make sense why Blackmoor was north of that, since Arneson was in Minnesota, although pretty sure it was really far north.
Yeah, I'm not I see I was yeah, I'm not sure exactly where it was supposed to be. There was Did you have anything else on Blackmore?
Well, I'm actually done until we get to 1973, where I will have more on everything, but then I was going to start doing it in a more like by year type of thing.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I'll wait to because I know a little bit about Blackmore, so I'll wait till we do those other years to jump in with that if
Well, it's up to you.
I find a spot. No, it's okay. It might fit in better with later on.
It might, but keep those in mind, and if it doesn't, we'll just slide it in.
Okay.
But yeah, that's what I have up until the kind of guys, they played in November 72 and Gary started doing things in November, December, and got the first characters, and next thing we'll do is 1973.
All right.
And then after that, 1974, which actually is
Uh,
50th
yeah.
anniversary.
Cool.
But if you're good, I'm good.
I'm good.
Write us, rate us, review us, share us with your friends and family and enemies and Sir Fang, whatever.
Your D&D group.
Yeah. Then, till next time, I am Sir James.
I'm Fireball Slinging Jody.
Run away! Some of us will be decimated at you later.
Bye.
The Macabre Manor is brought to you by the Twin Terrors. All rights reserved. Stay tuned for some fun outtakes.
Yay.
I'm back.
Boo.